Elissa Walker Campbell is on the air,
asking the questions you want to know
with sports' biggest and best names. Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer Mark Folliwell.
Rick is, I think, just a great guy at handling these situations. I have all the respect in the world for him as a coach, how to manage the roster and knew what all of his guys were capable of doing and or not doing and put them in a position to succeed.
The fastest hour in radio.
Big names, big sports talk.
The Big E Sports Show, hosted by Elissa Walker Campbell.
The conversation continues right here at eRadioSports.com. I'm your host, Elissa Walker Campbell. We're talking about Rolando Blackman, and now we're going to shift avenues and shift gears, and I want to talk about your prolific career in the NBA. But I think in order to understand that, I want you to take us back to your childhood, growing up in Panama City, Panama. And actually, I have to share that your first affinity and love, Rolando, was not the game of basketball, but it was soccer.
Definitely so. And I mean, in playing the game in Panama, I can remember as a four-year-old, and also when I came up to the United States, was playing the game of soccer and kicking the ball around for 4 years and really enjoying that. But at the age of five, and my grandmother decided that it would be better for me to be in the United States and petitioned for me to come to the United States, I finally got out of the country at the age of eight and came to this country on a student visa to go to school. So with that, in New York public schools, I took a Braniff International, which doesn't exist anymore, into JFK. My family picked me up, and that was the start of everything, too. Public schools right in New York City, and it was just a tremendous time knowing that I had a chance at an educational opportunity here in the United States. I had a chokehold, Elissa. I had a chokehold on that because I knew that it was a great opportunity given to me by my grandmother and my family to come to this country for an educational process.
But I have to share, I mean, wasn't that a big culture shock to go from tropical Panama City to go to Brooklyn, New York, concrete? I mean, we love New York.
But... Listen, it was crazy because I'm coming from a place where fruits are growing all over the place, bananas and mangoes and all kinds of things are coming. And I get into this country and I'm with my grandmother the very next days. And I go downstairs and it's awash in this gray thing, this concrete is all over the place. I walk up halfway the block and a tree is growing out of the thing. And it was just a complete shift and a complete change for what I thought was going to be happening as far as that's concerned. All the cars, all the noise, Brooklyn, New York, people are all over the place. So it was quite a cultural shock for the first few years to being able to get that done. But remember, I came to this country hablando puro español, solamente español. So when you're talking about going to remedial reading classes in the morning, I had to take 3 years of remedial reading classes to get to understand what it is to speak, and the boy was in the class. The class was two blocks away. Wow. I had to go through all of that for the 3 years to get back into an English format because hablando puro español con la familia solamente, hey, no va en Nueva York. So it didn't go in New York City, so I had to get my English together and making sure that was going. But public school was fantastic in New York City.
Well, I know you loved being with your grandmother, but you were away from your parents for, what, 3 years?
3 years,
I mean,
time.
That, I can't imagine it. What, 7, 8 years old?
Yes, and 8 years old. And my sister...
How did you navigate through that?
Well, the thing about it was that we had a loving family, a caring family, just a Christian family. So the important factor was that I was covered in that sense. I was staying with my grandmother and taking care of business in that way. And I was in a new environment. So I was going from school, play yard, and then back into the apartment. So with that, it was just fantastic. I didn't have any worries because the love and care was there with all the things that were going on. But it was just a great opportunity to really understand what this country was all about. But knowing that I'm here, getting an education was a big, big deal for me at the time.
On a lighter note, what was that first snow like?
Wow, it's beautiful. I mean, it was fantastic. I was looking out the window, Eastern, 500 Eastern Parkway was the block number, and I looking outside, and I saw these things falling down. I didn't know what it was, and then all of a sudden, a half an hour later, it was staying on the floor, and it was just magical to see the whole thing all over, and I went outside and put my hand on it. It was cold. Mm-hmm. It was just a crazy time to see snow and to understand that this thing is going to be coming down every year. So it was a lot of fun for me. A lot of fun.
So tell us how you transitioned from playing soccer and who introduced you to the game of basketball.
Well, a matter of fact, at the age of 10, I played soccer all the way throughout when I got to New York for 2 years. But the important thing about it was that everybody in Brooklyn, New York was playing basketball. So I would go to the park and play by myself for a couple of years. But then I decided to get out there and try to help myself play the game. And I would take the basketball and get picked on a team, and I would take the ball and run with it to an open spot and dribble. And then all the guys would come over, I'd run with it, and they would be saying, "You're terrible, you can't play, where are you from? You this and that and the other." And at the time, it was a terrible time for me as far as basketball, because I would never get picked. I'd get picked. They'd be berating me every time, which I deserved it. I deserved it as far as that's concerned. But then I go to the park every Sunday, and a gentleman by the name, Lucky Me.
Blessed
is right. Yes. By the name of Ted Gustus. I was standing behind the fence. I can remember my hands being in the fence, and he came right to the fence and just said, "Hey, you want to play some basketball?" Yeah. And he brought me around to the park where he was having basketball camps and clinics all the time for the kids, and had 8 baskets. Number 1 was the best, and number 8 was the people who couldn't play, throwing it all over the place. I started at basket number 8, but he was teaching each and every time. We'd have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and be at the basketball court to play for an hour, go back home, shower, and get to school in the mornings. So I was there consistently. But Ted Gustus, who's still doing that, he's the head of the Public School Athletic League in New York right now, the PSAL right now. He's the head of that, and he's still helping kids all over the place. Not only did he help me, but he helped a great many others in the neighborhood, because he was our neighborhood dad. Our moms would say something, and he would match it. And so we didn't have any problems with the streets or with having a different opinion. So it was just a great time for me, and it was just very, very special at the time.
So you weren't just learning the fundamentals of basketball. It was about life skills, too.
Completely, because Teddy had his family also, too, with his wife. It's just a fantastic thing to learn from Ted and Karen, and to know that once I got onto the street, they were talking about education. They were talking about formatting yourself for the future, understanding things that were going on, and learning the game of basketball at the same time. So in that format, I was saved, because I had a direction, a focus, and I knew that I would have a future if I would listen to exactly what was going on, not only in school, but listen to Teddy, who was taking all of us, a gang of kids, down in the right direction.
Rolando, you're a tremendous testimony to perseverance and fortitude. Many people may not realize, but that you were cut from your junior high team, your 7th, your 8th, and 9th grade year. We talk about Michael Jordan, you know, being cut from his high school team. Pain. But I mean, how did you respond to that kind of adversity? Did you go into seclusion? I mean, how did you deal with that?
The seventh grade, I went to the tryouts and got my number back there. They got cut. I was feeling terrible. 8th grade, I felt terrible. 9th grade, I thought I was ready, because it was 3 years later. And so that was the worst year I can remember of my life, going through school, going through class, and making sure I was in a fog. It was a cloudy type of thing. Even with my mom talking, even with Ted, it was a terrible time. But the idea was that when I still kept focused, stayed to school, making sure that I would get back home, understood what Ted was saying, and then just we would go to church every Sunday. So those types of spirit, the spiritual peace was a big deal. Because people don't know also, too, I was an altar boy. I was an altar boy from when I was 12, 13, 14, and 15 at the Episcopal Church. So I was making sure and cleaning all the gowns, and I was lighting the candles at the church, cleaning the pews, putting all the books together, making sure I put the candle down. So in living in that environment and playing the game and going through disappointment and trying to still be this player, keep doing that, I was covered. I didn't know anything about anything else outside the environment. So it was just a great time as far as that's concerned. By the time I was in the 10th grade, the next year I came, went to a basketball practice, just a little gym class. And the coach asked me if I wanted to play basketball. And from then on, the next time I tried out for a team was the 1980 Olympic basketball team, because every other team from then on, I was already on every other team, because it just started to grow in that sense that I got better and better and better. But I always had a great format, though. I always had somebody caring for me. I always had somebody saying good things to me. But the biggest thing for me was I always kept my mouth shut and listen. Mm-hmm. Some mother always told me, "You don't have to answer me every time I talk to you." So you don't have to give me an answer.
Many times, yes.
You don't have to give me an answer. And the important factor was that there were so many different people. My grandmother had cousins, aunts, Ted, mom. Those are the things that were right there for me, too. And just trying to grow in the essence of learning how to shoot this basketball, as well as the educational process, as well as learning what it is to lead, what it is to right, wrong, understanding the format of what life is all about, and growing myself for this thing called the future. How was I going to react, and the things that were going to happen in the future, for sure.
So, Rolando, when did you have the revelation that and realization that you would be able to take your game to the next level and to go to college? Take us through that process.
Well, the process came because I was playing at Kansas. I'd gone through high school and played very well. I was top 5 in high school coming through. It was all city.
In Brooklyn?
In Brooklyn, New York, okay. Too, top 5 in the city. But the important factor was that there were so many other great players all around that when I picked my school out of the 250 at K-State, I went to K-State, that the first year I played was a super, super situation. I had a great All-American there. But what happened is that the next year, My next year, my sophomore year, I started to play so well, very, very well, and started to get a lot of adulation as far as that's concerned. I didn't believe so much as far as that's concerned, but the junior year, I got invited to the Olympic tryouts. It was 1980. Mm-hmm. And when I went to the Olympic tryouts in Kentucky, and all the country, everybody from all over the country came down there, and we had the first day's practice. After the first day's practice, which we had a practice in the morning and we had a practice in the evening, after that first day's practice, I could swear to you, I finished the second practice and I was untying my Nike shoes, which I was not allowed to wear because we wore Converse in college. Uh-huh. And I had a heat come over me, a heat of understanding. I understood that, hey, you, in my mind, you're the best guard here. And of course, I negated to say, of course, Isaiah Thomas was there at the same time. So what I'm talking about was a two-guard situation. But mm-hmm. at that very first moment, I understood that the whole country of great players were here, and I'm better than all of them. So with that now came the other side. Call coach, talk to him about it. And my coach Hartman just said to me, Rolando, what is your problem, son? You've always been the best. What are you talking about? Why are you calling me talking about being the best? You are the best, son. Go out there and get on that team. And he hung up. Mm. Oh, after that, I don't know. You just feel this thing inside that you now know. Because coming from K-State, you're like, they call you the mid-major. They call all these things. And you're not from Kentucky or UCLA or whatever the deal is. But when you see those guys and you go up against them and you totally take them out of the format, that's when I had my epiphany and understood that I could be something in the league and continue to play this game.
But Rolando, you're Mr. Clutch. I mean, you had so many big moments when you were there at K-State in Manhattan, Kansas. And take us through as far as at the NCAA tournament. You hit that last second shot against Steve Johnson, Oregon State. It was fabulous. I watched it on YouTube.
You know something? All those plays came as a natural piece because we were so frustrated as a team because Coach Hartman would go through that play. We went through that play about 20 times. Uh-huh. Every practice, we'd go through it 4, 5, 6, 7 times. And by the time it came, we were so upset with him. But when it came that day that we had to use that play, we were so happy that our coach took us through that because it became a natural thing. Everybody was comfortable, calm, and ready to go. The only thing I had to do was, just like in practice, was to hit the shot. Mm-hmm. And I went through the whole thing, got the plays at the end of the game, looked up at the clock, went at 9 seconds, made a thrust to the basket. He stopped it and then made a quicker thrust again. Here comes Mark Radford. Ray Bloom was coming. And I jumped up in the air and I did the same things that I was taught, was to lock in on the rim. The relationship is just me and the rim. And that's it. And put that ball up and over, right into the basket. It went through and bam, just like in practice. And ran back down the court. And I could never have been so happy for all the times our coach put us through that whole thing. And if you see the Sports Illustrated, by the way, my roommate and teammate who has half a body on the Sports Illustrated
is. You were on the front cover.
I was on the front cover, but the half body you see on that front cover is assistant coach Tim Jankovic of SMU now too. So that's Timmy. That's Tim Jankovic right there too. And I told Tim to please get out of my shot as far as that's concerned. I wasn't passing you the ball, Tim.
Isn't it the best though when you hit the game winner? I mean, we've all done that as a player. I love it.
No, it's great to get the basketball in that situation, but it's also a great responsibility that the team gives you and puts you into that situation. And then for me, I practiced that over and over and over again. And to have their confidence bolsters your confidence to being able to get the job done. And it's one of the greatest feelings ever to being able to hit game-winning shots and come through at the end, especially for all the guys that you're playing for. All of us as a team win.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number. 1-855-545-MYTV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. So cancel the cable and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-855-545-MYTV. Right now, to sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99, and there's no equipment to buy. You get free HD TV upgrade, a free DVR upgrade, and free professional installation. You control what you watch, when you watch it. record your favorite shows, pause and rewind live TV, even skip the commercials. Watch local channels too. At just $19.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-855-545-MYTV. 1-855-545-MYTV. Cancel the cable, cut costs, and get more. 1-855-545-MYTV. 1-855-545-MYTV.
Hi folks, Elissa Walker Campbell here to tell you about our good friends at Mercer Well Service, who pride themselves on integrity, leadership, and complete customer satisfaction in the oil and gas industry. They truly understand what it takes to be successful. In fact, they've been providing outstanding completion and workover rig services for over 50 years. One of the key components and reasons that they have been able to have such longevity is their exceptional staff and experienced personnel to assist you 24 hours, 7 days a week. Mercer Well Service also provides a full line of completion and workover rig services that include 158 rigs and have 25 swab units. Did you know that Mercer Well Service yard locations include Cleburne, Jacksboro, Kilgore, Whitesboro, and Sweetwater, Texas, among many others? And they are equipped with mud pumps, mud tanks, hydraulic catwalks, pipe racks, and rig supervisors. Why not give them a call today at 940-668-5147. Mercer Well Service. Call them at 940-668-5147.
Elissa Walker Campbell is on the air,
asking the questions you want to know
with sports' biggest and best names, Chicago Bulls game analyst Stacey King.
The one thing about this team is that they're resolved. I mean, they continue to fight through injuries. We have guys on the bench that are stepping up. Our depth has been one of the reasons why we're one of the better teams in the NBA.
The fastest hour in radio. Big names, big sports talk. The Big E Sports Show, hosted by Elissa Walker Campbell.
So take us to June of 1981. You quickly go from just a stellar collegiate career into being the ninth pick for the Dallas Mavericks. What was that like in that process?
It was fantastic because Mark Aguirre, the first pick,
yes.
I was sitting in the room in New York City and he passed by. So he knew more than I knew because he passed by me and he said, same team. So I'm like, and he passed by. And the next thing you know, 15 minutes later, they started the draft, and they said, the Dallas Mavericks select Mark Aguirre. So I said, Dallas? So I was sitting there, and I was supposed to go to Atlanta, maybe Atlanta at 4, and maybe San Diego at 8, I think it was. But those two passed, and then here comes Dallas, and it was just a great joy, just a wonderful joy to hear Mr. O'Brien at 6'6" out of Kansas State University. It was just fantastic to hear it and get on up and go shake his hand and be part of the Maverick organization. Fantastic time.
Well, I tell you, I had a chance to catch up with your former president and general manager, Norm Sanju.
Oh, Norm.
And he was wonderful. He had high praise for you. But he talked about what a special class that was with Mark Aguirre and yourself.
Yes.
And Jay Vincent.
Oh, yeah, so Jay Vincent. And not only we had Jay Vincent, we had a guy by the name of Kurt Nymphius, who was a big center on the team that did a great job, too. Elston Turner was on that stuff, too. We had Big Pictures called us the super rookies because we had five of us that were rookies that were really playing and doing a great job and learning the game and putting us through. And, you know, Coach Dick Mata at that time really helped the process, just like in college, and Coach Jack Hartman, Dick Mata really did a great job in teaching us the rules and principles of winning as a pro. And those things also stayed with us in our minds all the way throughout to being able to prepare and to be accountable each and every night you stepped on the court. So coaches make a big, big difference as far as a youngster is concerned to being able to do a job consistently.
Tell us a little bit about for some of the younger listeners and viewers. I mean, what was it like to play for Coach Mata? What was it like that rookie year? There certainly had to be some challenges along the way.
Well, it was a complete challenge, especially when you're talking about a guy who was given the job to being able to make this franchise a very good team. And with that, you know that he was yelling and screaming, and it was just a toughest time that I've gone through. And a matter of fact, I didn't like Coach Mata very much at all as far as that first year, and he knew it as far as that's concerned. But the important factor was that he was riding us so hard that he brought me out to Fish Haven, Idaho, when we were out there, where he has a place out there too. He said, "Hey, look, Ro, we're gonna take things differently the second year and move things forward." We went fly fishing. I was rolling down this river. And we were fly fishing all over. I'm like, I've never done this before in my life, a city kid running around fly fishing. But it was a wonderful time to get closer and find the camaraderie. But the important factor is that once those times came through, you could tell that with Brad Davis running the point guard, Mark Aguirre there, Jay Vincent having the opportunity to do that, and the team kept growing with James Donaldson, having Sam Perkins, Detlef Schrempf was on. I mean, all those things came through in the process where we were able to now change the franchise around and really get through the principles of what we were taught from Coach Mata and Bob Weiss at the time, and being able to become a very good basketball team as the years went on.
Rolando, you can tell that you're a very intense person. I had a chance to talk to Mark Cuban, and he talked about he said, used the adjective hyper. Norm Sanju talked about that you're the most intense person that he's ever been around. And I have to ask you, where did that come from as far as with that obviously carried over to your approach with the game?
Yeah, well, it's just a fire of trying to win. That's the thing about it. I mean, it's important.
Yeah, Norm said you could will the shot and you'd be at the free throw line.
It's important to win, and it's important. And also, too, I go through all these types of things because I know what winning and losing means, and I know also what the disappointment of taking on an athletic competition means. Mm-hmm. You're in front of everybody. It's a situation where you are being judged. It's hard. It's not easy to play the game and think that because you're on the court, it's supposed to be so much fun. Fun for me is winning. And that's what the important part of the whole situation is. And for me, I know I'm an A-type personality because once I concentrate on something and I say, okay, I'm going to do this, then all my concentration and all my focus is poured into that at the very highest level. I like the personality that I am. I like being this way. I get up in the morning and I'm burning fire. Fire is burning in the morning. I'm like, okay, what are we doing today? This is the kind of thing, and I enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy being around good people all the time, people that can direct and process me in a way that I can move forward and get on out there and make a difference and that kind of a thing. My worst thing that for me is that I hate running into bad people or dour people or people that take away my energy or take away the focus that I have to try to do good that day because I want to do good. But the important thing is to try to be around people that take me in that direction, and I try to find that process each and every day. But that's just the way I am, and I like being this way, especially now that I'm completely in the community for the Mavs.
Love that singular focus. So we're short on time, but tell us, as far as with your playing days, what is a magical Maverick memory that you can share, one of your perhaps favorite games?
Well, I can share two with you,
okay.
Alyssa. I can share two with you. The main thing about it was, number one, I would put it at Moody Madness, when we had an opportunity that year to beat the Seattle Supersonics with those great players that they had on the team.
Was Tom Chambers playing?
Matter of fact, I don't think Tommy was on that team. He came a little bit later. That downtown Freddie Brown and Jack Sigma, and it was a different team that they had that had won the championship the years before. But what was important about that is that it gave us our crown for the next year. It told us that we were headed in the right direction in beating them in that first round playoff, and then having a chance to go up against the Lakers and play some more basketball. And it put a great stamp on us. The second part was hitting those free throws at the All-Star game.
Oh, yes.
Hitting the
and
free
Isaiah
throws.
Thomas was giving you a hard time, wasn't he?
Isaiah and Magic were over to the right side talking. You could hear Isaiah and Magic playing games, and Magic and Bird, Jordan, and Irvin were on the left side. So my life was on the line. That's why I felt my life was on the line. This is all the things that kids dream of. No time on the clock, two free throws, and I just had to hit. I don't know what would have happened had I missed those free throws and had to hit. Be cut every day about, oh, you missed it, I would have died most likely, but the important thing is that all the training I came through and those two moments live as a great, great portion of my athletic career.
I'm so glad you bring up that example, because when I talked to Norm Sanju, he had talked about you icing those free throws, and he said, you know, Tom Chambers was named the MVP, mm-hmm. and he truly felt that you should have been named the MVP, but of course it was up in Seattle.
I was happy for Tom, I was happy for us, because we did, again, we won the game.
Absolutely. As we get ready to wrap up our interview, let's talk about the 2011 season. It was such a magical year, led by head coach Rick Carlisle and Dirk, and, you know, the best player on the planet. planet. What did that mean to you personally and professionally to see it all come a part of it? I mean, you've been a part of the Mavericks mosaic, you and Derek and Brad, and just to be a part of it.
I was just completely ecstatic for the Maverick organization. I was ecstatic for Mark Cuban, who had come in the year 2000, hired me. I remember I was a part of the whole thing coming through. He was developing not only this Maverick team, but he was also developing all of the NBA. Everybody was being shown how to win, how passionate he was to being able to get these things done, and also for the city of Dallas to have gone through some hard times back in the late 90s, mm-hmm. and having the opportunity now to come through after all these years in the 2000s and win the championship. Mm-hmm. I was happy because the important thing about it is in 2006, just then too, I was part of that coaching staff also too, that we lost to the Miami Heat, and I was happy to see that they went up against the Heat once again. Mm-hmm. And they were able to come through and have a championship. And it was just a glorious time how Mark invited the Carters down, Linda and Don Carter, to the podium and handed the trophy over to them. All the players were there and all the people. It was just a great a show of class for Mark to do that in that instance that brought all the Maverick organization, both past and the future, all together. And when you talk about a coach like Rick Carlisle going through those playoffs, each and every one. No one thought they were going to do it against Portland. And then all of a sudden now, as you go through it, of course the Lakers were going to beat us. No, they didn't. And all of a sudden now you're talking about the Thunder was going to do it. And that didn't happen. Of course they're not going to beat the Heat. And you go through those playoff series, and it was just a magical time. And have the players, again, all come together and being led by this German kid that was just tremendous. I mean, you're talking about a rock of Gibraltar, someone who showed the highest level on a consistent basis, game after game after game. Remember, even though coaches are writing stuff on a board, they're putting all these defenses down, he's able to negate that and still lead his team to a championship. It was just an enlightening time for me. I'm so proud of him, Mark, and also Coach Carlisle, to being able to get this done and bring this whole city together. I still get goosebumps about that, because it's a fantastic thing that the Mavericks are champions in Dallas.
Well, you talk to the Maverick fans right now because the future really is bright as far as where the direction that the organization is headed and with this team.
Well, I think it is. I think anytime you have a championship in your background and understand exactly what needs to get done, especially when you have players that need to come to this franchise to be able to support a guy like Dirk Nowitzki in the last years of his, as far as his career is concerned, and to being able to make that transition. In the transition doesn't have to be a download as far as that's concerned. It has to be a situation where now the players are coming here. It would have happened this year also, I tell everyone, because when you talk about having Dirk for the first 2 months, you're talking about even 20 to 25 to 30 more wins that the Mavericks would have right now. So it's not like it's going down. It's just a matter of getting these players to come in and to understand that this future is bright and good things will still continue to happen for the Dallas Mavericks.
Rolando, it's been a true pleasure. We wish
Alyssa,
you continued
thank
success.
Thank you. Thank you so
and
much.
Enjoy little baby Gabriel.
I appreciate it. I will. You know I will.
Absolutely.
That's for sure.
Be sure and join us online for more exclusive interviews at eradiosports.com. We'll see you real soon.